Okay, hi everybody, it's Alexi Sell, back with the Alexi Sell podcast, podcast number 110. 110, of course, there's Messerschmitt BF110, the disappointing twin-engined heavy fighter of the Luftwaffe during the Second World War, or Zestora was the other name for it, destroyer, but they thought it would be a compliment to the BF-109. Often, you know, people say ME-109. It's not an ME-109. It's an MEBF-109. And the 110 was the BF-110. But in the end, it was conceived by Goering and the Luftwaffe as a fighter. But in the end, it needed fighter escort to operate successfully. Later on in the war, it became a successful night fighter.
Jesus fucking Christ. Is this World War II?
Yes.
Why didn't it need an escort to like refuel it?
No, just to protect it from other from Spitfires and hurricanes.
It wasn't very like agile or anything.
No, it was a disappointment. Really, as a they thought it would be, because of course the definition of the great World War II era fighter bomber, of course, is the de Havilland Mosquito, twin Merlin engines.
What number did
superb that machine? It's just called it. I mean, it went through very many different marks, but it was just called the Mosquito. I've been to the factory, which was in Hertfordshire. I developed as a private project by de Havilland, and then
okay, fascinating stuff. You were just in Germany, though, weren't you?
So I have to say, I've said this before. I don't know how you know this. It doesn't exactly burnish my left-wing credentials, but I have a predilection to go on the sort of cruises that are advertised before Midsummer Murders on ITV3. Not Viking. I've never been on a Viking cruise. I think their ships look all right. They're quite stark and modern Viking, but we were on a similar ship. It's that we started off, we flew into Budapest overnight on the ship in Budapest, and then sailed up the west along the Danube. So we went Budapest, Bratislava, Linz in Austria. Oh, there were other places, and then ending up in Vienna, and then we were supposed to go on, but the lock was broken. So anyway, we had to go into another ship, and the last night I think we spent in Passau in the Danube, and then flew from Munich Airport. I have to say, Munich Airport is the worst airport I've ever been. If we need any more evidence of the collapse of German civilization, then look no further than Munich Airport. It's really old-fashioned. It's got weird kind of idiosyncratic. It doesn't have that kind of standardized lettering, you know, signage. So it's all like weird, like it says, you know, like checking gates A, and then there's like an arrow and it points to like a wall and stuff. And it's just, it sends you down and up, and it was terrible. And it's sort of very slow passport control, and that's perhaps deliberate. I would definitely qualify.
It sounds like an IKEA.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. But it's the worst. I mean, I've been in some airports, and it's the worst airport I've ever been in. It took us 2 hours to get from, you know, being dropped off at the airport. We had to go straight to the gate, you know, to get the plane. It was but this is what I do. So I spent Christmas Day in Vienna, which is a beautiful, beautiful city, you know. Also Linz, of course. Linz is an interesting place. It's an amazing city. I mean, I think...
Where's that?
It's in Austria, restored. Uh-huh. I think it was quite heavily bombed because it was a big center of manufacturers, a big steel town. And, you know, but rather than like, you know, what we did with Sheffield or Birmingham, which is basically flatten it and put roads through it. What they've done is restored the city to its former glory. But there is a school in right in the center of Linz where both Adolf Hitler and Ludwig Wittgenstein, the greatest philosopher of all time, were in the same school, and were actually scheduled to be in the same class. But there was an exam or something, and Wittgenstein was put up a year and Hitler was put down a year. So they never actually were in the same class.
Wow. That was probably a crossroads in the yeah, world's history.
Yeah.
Everything could have gone very differently.
Yeah. It's the town that Hitler thought of as his home. But extraordinary place, extraordinary beautiful and very, the way that you, it's now, you know, leading kind of in green technology and all that. It's the way, rather than the way Britain has, approached post-war redevelopment, which is to make everything, to just flatten everything.
Mm.
Linz is an example, really, of just, making a, taking the best of the past and adding it to the, technologies of the future and making a really harmonious whole, whereas Britain's urban redevelopment is just a nightmare, really, particularly across northern cities.
But that does lead to, I'm sure it's not without its problems, if you go to Paris, some of the, the flats there, they struggle getting water or internet because they're just such ancient structures that they just refuse to redevelop in a substantial way.
Yeah.
Still got the same foundations and walls and
But that's pipes. Why all the French are so slim and fit, because they have to walk up.
And angry.
Six flights of stairs every day, but yeah, they are angry about that.
I saw a video of this American who lives in Paris, and she was like, I'm going to show you how my journey to my apartment from the street. And she's like, literally, she's on the street, and she just shows you a point of view video of her getting into her flat from the street. And it takes, the video, I'm not kidding, is 4.5 minutes long.
Because she has to go upstairs. If not longer.
She has to take stairs, a rickety old lift with no door on it, and then a bunch more stairs, random corridors, and about, she needs like 3 sets of keys to reach this tiny,
they have some complicated, you can't go around somebody's flat in Paris, you have to they have to give you a code that you have to punch in, and then it's incredibly, actually, we could talk a bit about lifts. Here's the thing, have you ever heard of a paternoster?
No, I'm going to be honest.
Well, a paternoster is a continuous lift. It's like a kind of conveyor belt. They used to have one in the English department at Newcastle University when I used to go up there when I was still at school, and I was friendly with Wilco Johnson and Brian Ferry. And it's a sort of like, it's, so it's a continuous, so it's not one lift. It's like a load of lifts following each other and with no doors on it. And you just jump in and jump off. I think it was probably considered, I don't know whether it's British technology. It's probably a bit dangerous, really. I think there's obvious dangers there in terms of getting trapped between the roof of the lift and the kind of the entrance and stuff. But for a while there in the 60s, you'd from time to time encounter a paternoster. I don't know whether you'd still encounter them anymore, but I'd love to hear people.
There's one in the University of Sheffield.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
In the Arts Tower.
Right.
One in Aston University as well.
But seems to be popular in universities,
And in Germany, Prague, and Netherlands, you'll find them too.
Yeah.
It's called a paternoster, which means our father. Do you know why? Can you guess why?
No.
Because of the resemblance of rosary beads, the way they rotate. Oh,
lordy, lordy. Isn't that interesting? See, it was a sort of challenge to big lift, wasn't it? It was a paternoster corporation, probably like plucky little guys. And they were like, you got big lift. You got Otis and Schindler. And Krupp. And they were like, we're plucky little. We've got a different lift. But of course, they were big lift in the end. Discredited them just because people got stuck between them. I don't know.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But if anybody's got any recollections of paternoster, the plucky little lift that said.
When my eldest sister was a baby in like 1979, maybe, or maybe 81, they were in Damascus. My mum had her in a pram. on a lift, and it was one of those lifts with like the, you know, the door that you slide back and forth yourself manually.
Yeah, yeah.
With a concertina door. Yeah. Yeah. And so you can see the walls rushing by as you go up. And my sister's like shoelace got caught or something, and she ended up getting dragged into it. And my mum got it to stop pretty quickly, but not before my legs, my sister's legs, technically also true, were trapped in between the wall and the lift. And she ended up having to go to hospital and get surgery on her legs and stuff. But luckily she was too young to remember it.
Right.
And babies are very soft and malleable, but I can't imagine how scary.
Well, that's,
And the paternoster doesn't.
Yeah, paternoster.
At least there's nothing to get trapped in. It's kind of just like open faced.
No, maybe we should. I've started looking from time to time. They're doing some interesting things in lifts now for the older client. You know,
really?
You can get your own lift for about $30,000, I think. Straight through the floorboards.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know how they work. They're not like conventional lifts with like counterweight and stuff like that. They just I don't know how they work really.
It's like a hydraulic piston shoots you up into your living room,
possibly,
or suction tube.
Yeah,
you're getting to that age. Have you thought about getting a Steno stair lift?
Yeah, well, I got one for my mum. Really, I got one for my mum. Spectacularly ungrateful as usual. it's kind of fun to ride on for a while, really. There's a brilliant episode. The actress who played, she died, who played Tony Soprano's mother. Reminded me of my mother, really. But there's a brilliant, I think the first time we see her is Tony's around at her house, and she appears from the top right-hand corner on a stair lift, slowly coming into frame. It's one of the great pieces of television making of all time, and this malevolent, poisonous character. Who thought when we started this show was going to be like, I mean, how far in are we now?
12 minutes.
And we're still talking about lifts. This is the kind of shit you don't get on LBC, isn't it, really? This is what you get, and the rest is history. The rest is men that look like
LBC,
monkeys.
Man. Why do they give airtime to... LBC winds me up so much because they shouldn't fucking give airtime to these toxic, disgusting opinions as if they are important or educated or informed.
Well, it's traffic, isn't it, really? It's just... I don't know. I never listen to it.
I understand why it exists, but there should be some regulation or the people who are... The present... There should never just be one presenter. There should be two presenters so that it's... Because you end up sometimes have like a fascist talking to a fascist. And
really? I never... You listen to it when you're out driving your cab. I don't ever listen to it. I occasionally see clips on YouTube of Dick Ferrari.
Yes, that's what I get, yeah. I'm just watching this very hypnotic footage of a ride on a paternoster in Prague. Oh, wow, when you get to the top, you can see the gears as it turns you around.
Really?
That looks dangerous. You'd want to stick your arm in that. It'd be so tempting. You'd end up like Buster Keaton spinning around the cogs.
Yeah.
Alexi, we've been away for a couple of weeks. Apologies to our listeners.
Yeah, I've not been well, really. We should have done one. I've got the cold that's going around.
Yes.
The one that comes on very, very quickly. And then I'm getting towards the end of week two now and still not by any means 100%, really. I haven't been out in the evenings or anything, just occasionally for a short drive or a walk to the shops, really, as much as I can do. But it does make me feel, if I go away, the world does go to shit even more, doesn't it? I mean, I do feel like if I'd been keeping an eye on things, maybe some of the invasion of Venezuela might not have happened.
Yes, Venezuela. That's the big thing that happened while we were away.
Yeah.
Presumably. I have to somewhat blame you a little bit because you were off the clock.
I know. I agree. I blame myself.
starting the new year with a bang, I suppose. It was shocking. It's very shocking headlines, isn't it? But now it's settled down a bit. What's your reflection on the situation there?
It's still kind of mysterious, I think, what happened, because with my military matters hat on, the fact that it was, looked like a very dangerous, there's that shot of the helicopters silhouetted against the night sky, and anybody with an assault rifle or a couple of shots at them with an Igla, which is a man pads and man portable anti.
Oh wow!
A Russian and I don't that for, but it, I mean I think that there was either sab there was either a remarkable level of sabotage or something really that the Venezuelan air defenses seem to have been turned off, because some of those planes, I think Venezuela had a reasonable air defense system and it just didn't operate for whatever reason. So it's questions about what happened there. I mean, it's obviously, it's completely illegal. And again, it's funny, isn't it? There's that guy on Sky shouting at Jeremy about it. It reminds me of the early days of the genocide. Will you condemn Maduro, Amnesty International issue report. I'm sure correctly, I'm no fan of Maduro, that, the two children were killed. Well, if you're enforcing murders of children, you'd have a list, and you'd start with Benjamin Netanyahu, and nobody seems to be going after him. I don't know. I mean, it's, nobody's talking about Epstein anymore either. I mean, I don't know to what extent Trump would go to stop all talk of that, really, because that's something that's got, it was difficult for him, got buried. I don't know. I have nothing particularly interesting. I have no particular insight, I think, on these matters, really, apart from the military aspect, really, about what's going on it's wrong. It's obviously a heinous contravention of international law, if any of that's left.
Yeah. It is, and how much is it just sensationalism? Because moving forward, there isn't much, from what I've heard, how much can America really control and take over Venezuela? A lot of people are saying it would be like Vietnam times 50, because of the how much anti-American sentiment there is in South America and the countries surrounding Venezuela. Like, how many militias would come in to help defend Venezuela, guerrilla fighters and armies? It would become a very difficult war if they decided to go down a military route. And if they
they're never going to put boots on the ground. Yeah.
If they ever wanted to try and actually control the oil, that's something that will take 10 plus years to actually make a substantial difference and actually start getting oil out of the reserves bringing it into America. So it's not a very sustainable thing. And to already, before you even started actioning that kind of stuff, to already start talking about Greenland, it does just seem very much...
It's kind of empty theatrics in a way, isn't it? It's theatrics. The illusion of, I guess
the most pragmatic thing is just they want to install a leader there that will just comply with American wishes.
It shows up the utter bankruptcy of our own media. All elections in Venezuela up to the one in 2024 were certified as being legitimate, really. That Maduro was democratically elected up until this election. Now, this election, I don't know the details of whether or not but there's an implication that Maduro is a long-term dictator, and that's simply not true.
He hasn't been good for the country, and I think in recent years he has turned into, he's shown signs of psychopathic dictatorship, and
I think probably there have been clamped down some free speech, but still, there's a lot. I mean, my information about Venezuela is quite out of date, but there was lots of independent anti-government TV channels a few years ago. Mm. I remember the bankruptcy and the dishonesty of our media. A few years ago, there was a guy called Guaido who declared himself president. I don't know if he was even elected to anything, but the whole of the Western media had swung behind this guy, Guaido, and said, yeah, he's the president of Venezuela now. And in fact, and it was only when Venezuela, the people and its, you know, government, and nobody went along with it, that they sort of quietly dropped him. But it was an extraordinary piece of kind of example of the bankruptcy. I mean, and also fucking Machado getting the Nobel Peace Prize. She said, I think their first statement was, if I come to power in Venezuela, I will move our embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Oh, and she offered to give Trump her Nobel Peace
Prize. Yeah, right. He's obviously, I think he does seem like he won't support her because he's pissed off that he didn't, you know, get it really. Mm. But again, it shows what, you know, when you think that our media and, you know, our revered institutions like the Nobel Prize are all, you know, dedicated to a kind of neoliberal, imposition of a kind of neoliberal ideology, then, you know, it shows you sometimes how deep the fix is, really, how distorted our media and our political system is, you know.
Yeah.
I talked before about Nord Stream 2. Have I talked about Nord Stream 2?
Rings a bell.
The pipeline that, you know, the Russians were supposed to have. The headlines everywhere, the Russians had blown up their own pipeline.
Yeah, that was a while ago that we spoke about it.
Yeah, and then a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist called Seymour Hersh, who has to now, you know, whereas before he would be published by the New York Times or Washington Post, now had to release his finding on Substack, but a meticulously researched piece that proved that you know, the Western security services have blown it up. And, you know, that's never been corrected. That's always been just dropped, you know. We live in a...
Yeah.
We don't really need any more proof, but, you know, just you're constantly reminded of how much of a world of lies that we live in, really.
And the Labour files, you know, they just feel like dust in the wind
now.
At this point. It's like, what even was that?
Yeah.
They just keep piling on the shit until the shit at the bottom isn't even a memory anymore.
And also a friend of the podcast that we're going to have on, hopefully, there was the Israel lobby in the shape of the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. And this lunatic, what's she called? She's not even Jewish, Daphne. I can't want to get her name wrong. She lives down the south. Pro-Israel lunatic. Tried to bring Mark Lewis. They tried to bring a case against Reginald Hunter, you know, that whole thing. And the judge threw it out and made really scathing comments against the campaign against anti-Semitism, just saying they're trying to get him cancelled. They were dishonest. They didn't, you know, they were... It was clearly their evidence was not to be relied on. And that got no mention at all in the mainstream media. And it was really significant. It really showed the Israeli pro-Israel lobby up for what it is, really, the dishonesty and the malevolence of the Israel lobby. And, of course, you've also got this, you know, shit with still going on with Maccabi Tel Aviv and the Aston Villa match where, I mean, the reason I suppose they want to, you know, go on, you know, because Maccabi Tel Aviv, that is the soul of Israel, these racist, violent racists.
Yeah.
That they have to pretend that they're people who should be, you know, but a kind of parliamentary committee, which I think is stacked with members of Labour and Conservative Friends of Israel.
Yeah, it was, you know, five out of on the they were doing a committee about the Maccabee Tel Aviv case.
Yeah.
Out of eight of the politicians on the committee were directly linked to their party's Friends of Israel group or an equivalent.
So, But this, you know, the parliament being so not caring about, health outcomes or justice or genocide, but being really devoting itself to being affronted because some foreign football fans couldn't get to come and see their team play. It shows the degree to which the Israel lobby really...
They're just forcing the point. They're just trying to find any strain of anti-Semitism in it when it was just a notoriously violent fan base that we wanted to prevent coming from Birmingham and causing damage.
Yeah.
And the people of Birmingham were like, if they come here, we're going to fight them back. Yeah. So they wanted to also prevent any sort of violence on the streets. Like, it's a straightforward, logical fucking thing to do. Stop digging. And congrats to Reginald. And it was Heidi Backram was the
Heidi
lady.
Heidi Backram, that's
He was beefing on X. Not and absolute. He's been dragged through it for months. It's been since early last year. It's been dragging on and on. And just for it to end up being nothing is
so, and that should have been covered. That should have been the lead in, the 9 o'clock news or whatever. That what the judge said about the malevolence of the campaign against anti-Semitism and this woman as well, and people like her. And it's truly shocking that that story didn't get any coverage at all. Really. I think one mention in the Guardian, one mention like in the Telegraph or somewhere. It reveals the nature of our society, really, and those who argue for Israel and their turpitude.
And so, another thing that this theatre of bangs and booms over in South America and is also distracting from is the ongoing genocide and the ongoing just continuous breakage of ceasefire in Palestine.
Yeah.
And the West Bank, the army shooting at students at Bir Zeit University who were gathering to watch a documentary about the Hind Rajab case, just... the IDF just opening fire on them and dispersing that crowd. Properties, family homes being demolished and seized.
Yeah. All that.
Farmers being terrorized. And it's almost like we're back to the status quo, just with a little extra spice of genocide. Like, because it was never peaceful there.
No.
We need to not stop shouting about it. And actually, I got a message on our Patreon. If I can share it with you quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Patreon subscribers. Support the show. Support the ongoing production of this grassroots show. We have. We don't use any advertising. It all depends on word of mouth. Please tell your friends. Please leave us a 5-star review on whatever app you use to listen to the podcast, or like and subscribe on YouTube, whatever. But also support us by going to patreon.com/AlexisSaleyPodcast. Watch video episodes and extra content and join the chat rooms. And Anthony on the chat room received an email from his MP saying they're going to ban repeated protests on the same subject. And this is from his MP, Chris Philp.
Shitbag.
Croydon
South.
He's
a Tory.
Tory.
He's not part of it. Yes. I mean, that would be what the Conservatives would
Well, he
bring
says,
in, I suppose.
It is right In one part of the email, it is right that the impact of the cumulative disruption caused by protests is considered by the authorities. However, it is important that we get the measure right, which is why Conservative Lords have put forward an amendment to replace the reference to a geographical area in definition of relevant cumulative disruption with that of a subject area. So basically they're going to keep tally of how often a protest is about not just the same subject, the same geographical location.
Mm. Yeah, well, yeah, the Tories are, you know, as yeah, I mean, Tories aren't in power, so I mean, Phil is a fuckbag, you know, they are, our rights to protest are being continually narrowed, really. Do we want to talk about the hunger? I haven't really been following the hunger strikers overly much.
Two of them are on the verge of death. It's really quite disturbing to read about, and it's very hard to find any mainstream outlet.
I think the one yesterday had a long piece on it on Radio 4.
That's something.
Yeah, at long last.
When was the last time we had hunger strikers in UK prisons or UK soil? It's the IRA, isn't it?
Yeah, Bobby Sands. Yep.
58 days, now 60 days. The government just refusing to do anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, you'll see them U-turn on, I think they're U-turning on business rates for pubs today. They'll U-turn. They will never, I don't think they will ever really U-turn on their crackdown on civil liberties. And I think that shows you whose interest they are operating, I think, really. They will you know, who they're trying to impress, really. I can't see that they will ever really. I mean, maybe if, Starmer goes and Andy Burnham comes in, they may quietly drop some of that, you know, the prescription of Palestine action. But this Starmer is so in the pocket of the Israel lobby that he will not shift on this one thing, shift on virtually anything else, but he will not shift on this. This is my guess, really.
And his willingness to let British people just die for the sake of the tiniest aspect of a foreign military.
Yeah, so a foreign military can make components for drones.
Can
kill children, yeah. Shows you where their priorities lie.
And it shows you they don't give a single fuck about any of us.
You know? No, you're right there, mate.
If it's them,
you're not wrong.
Now,
yeah.
I think it would take so little for you to be next for them not to give a shit about, you know.
Me?
You or any of our listeners?
Not me.
Yeah, you.
Me.
Well, you think you're immune?
No, not really.
Starmer would let you die. Sorry. I don't know why.
We've come a long way as well from the highly, highly kind of structured, you know, early podcast. I was just thinking as well, haven't we really? But I was wondering to come back. I think they missed a trick there. Calling it a paternoster is not great branding, is it, really? You know, if you called it like a people's shooter or something. Or not, you know, it's not, people are not, it's not, it doesn't inspire you, does it? It's not like Jaguar E-Type or McRib sandwich. It's not a great piece of branding, the paternoster, something in Latin that refers to rosary beads. I think the paternoster people missed a trick there.
Yeah, they're romanticizing a very mechanical conveyance of.
Yeah, it should have made it more romantic. I have to say I can't. I've got a cold, so I can't think of anything.
Well, it reminds me of that. Do you know that kid's toy where you have the penguins and there's a ladder? There's like a stairs that takes them up to the top, like this automated conveyor. That takes them to the top of a hill, and then the penguins shoot down this slide around this little course.
Right.
And they come back to the bottom of the steps. And then they get taken up to the top.
This is like a mechanical, this is a thing, it's a real thing, it's not a
it's
video.
It's a mechanical toy for kids when I was growing up, and it's like this little penguins racer thing, and that's what it reminds me of. I can't be asked to Google it because I don't even know where I'd begin, what I'd begin typing. So listeners at home, we want to rebrand the Paternoster, bring it back. What this is a big campaign. After all we've discussed today, Venezuela, Israel, the hunger strikers, yes. They think the main issue, we want to start a big BF campaign. Bring back the Paternoster, make it popular. See,
we're talking about penguins as well. Years and years ago, Lisa Mayer's son Isaac, when he was young, was obsessed with this website. Which was like it featured penguins. It was some kind of game in the Arctic. And he made me join up. So I remember I couldn't even be bothered spelling my, so I joined up as this penguin called a Kexi. I couldn't even be bothered spelling my name right. And I never did anything. I don't know whether I ever, this is similar to the driving game where I just park my car outside my house. I would occasionally check up on a Kexi. But anyway, there came a moment when they announced that they were going to turn this game off. And so loads of people who over the years had played this game and then stopped, they all came back for like, and it's a bit like that scene in where the world ends, isn't it? When a meteor is about to, you know, everybody came back and stood waiting for the end of this world. It was just a really interesting idea, really. And I think there's like an orange flash, and then it didn't exist anymore. Somebody will know the game. But I thought that was really interesting that loads of people, Kexi was there somewhere just standing there as he'd been standing there for 10 years.
Was it Club Penguin?
I'm not sure. Is that one that they turned off?
That's the one I'm finding. It looks like that's the one. Oh my God. So everyone just gathered to watch the end of the world.
Yeah. To holding hands perhaps.
That's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
And you took Isaac in your arms and told him it's going to be okay.
I don't know where Isaac was. Bright light. I don't know. Kexi was just like standing there. as he had done for a decade now. But yeah, he was there when the world ended, you know, staring up into the sky.
Rubber dinghy rapids, bro. Remember that?
No, I don't.
Four Lions?
No.
That Chris Morris film, Four Lions, from years ago, about the British terrorists.
Yeah, really good film, Chris Morris, yeah.
They used to meet up on the Penguin game. In that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Clever. He's an interesting talent. I was cycling up a few years ago, Oxford Street, and I saw Chris Morris standing on the corner talking to Adam Curtis.
Wow.
And I thought, I'll go and say hello. I thought that'd be too meta to see Adam Curtis and Alexei Sale and Chris Morris standing on the corner on Oxford Street talking would be just too much, really. So I just kept cycling, really. But that's one of my regrets, really, is that I didn't. I know Adam Curtis didn't know Chris Morris, but I'm a great admirer of his work. I wish I'd stopped and gone and said hello, really. So that's a real regret that I have.
Oh, yeah, that would have been a great photo.
Yeah, yeah, they all do know each other.
Be a great podcast as well.
Yeah.
You three.
Well, we could get Adam Curtis on because he's only around the corner. We could get him on now, probably.
Teasing me with that for years.
Oh, have I? I keep forgetting. Yeah. I'll go and get him now.
It'd be good to get his point of view.
Yeah.
On all this.
Oh, just to say, I've finished. I mean, I think I'm going to have to do another draft, which I'm finished my book. So that's.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so that's gone to the, that's with my editor now. She's going to give me notes. I think it's going to take another pass, actually, but hopefully that'll only be a few days. When reading it, it really flies when it works, really, but it's probably still a bit rudimentary in parts because it's such a kind of complex endeavor, really, that it's kind of like nothing else. So that's when you do something like that, it's always difficult, really. So,
and like with a world that is changing so rapidly every fucking day, do you try and keep up with that, or do you just like let go and just try and make it a time capsule in a way?
Well, yeah, I think that obviously the genocide is going to be with us, and so that as an indicator both of an outrage in itself, but also a kind of barometer of where our political system in the West is now and will be for the next few years.
Is that like the last chapter of the book?
It's the last, because it's a kind of memoir, but it's also about demonstrations I've been on. So it's a kind of composite. The last one, I mean, I chose at random a Gaza demonstration in May, really, to just talk about the... Mm. Yeah, you know, just try and describe it, really, you know, in a kind of lyrical way, but also...
every lyrical day.
You know, just to get the kind of, you know, the things that are always there in those demonstrations, really. So that's one aspect of it.
Does your trusty Arabian sidekick get a mention in the book?
I don't think you get a mention anywhere in the book. I'm sorry.
Good. That's what I wanted.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know, you know, day-to-day politics, you can't keep up. I mean, I hope we're still going for a kind of publication date in early September this year. So I hope we're still going to stick to that, really. Anyway, this is the 11th draft or something. There will be another draft, but it's kind of nearly there, really. So that's just...
Are you proud of it? Or is it hard to look at it that way?
It's like anything, really. Some days you think this is the greatest piece of art ever committed, you know, invented by mankind. Other days you think this is garbage, you know. So, I think it's, I mean, one of the reasons I want to take another pass at it is to try and see it in its entirety, really, rather than going from chapter to chapter. Sometimes when you go from chapter to chapter, you lose sight of the larger piece, really. It's very intense. I mean, it's my style. It's what I do on Sandwich Bar as well, that it's very boiled down, you know. It's a very rich kind of mix of jokes and anecdote and memoir and stuff like that. But I mean, that's the way I like to work, I think, more and more. The motivation for it didn't come from me, that it was my editor who said, you know, that the world needs this book. And it's been a more complex proposition because from that point of view, really. There's still, you know, when we started it, there was a tremendous desire for left-wing ideas, you know, whether that is still true. It'd be interesting. We're back on your party and all that stuff will be, I guess, back in. We're back to all that now as well. So we'll see, really.
I'm excited to see for myself.
I'll be on the publicity round. I'll be on the one show trying to.
Oh my God.
Explain. I don't know who hosts it. To explain Marx's theory to whoever it is.
All right. We're all behind you, Lex.
Thank you. Buy it. Yeah. And that may be when we'll start doing the Marx, the dance videos as well again. Use it as a promotional tool for the book, you know, put a kind of link or whatever for the book at the bottom, you know, to try and make, you know, rather than just doing it for own, you know, to try and get something out of it ourselves, really.
I can picture now, yeah, the video will end with a smash cut to an image of the book. Go out and buy Alexi's new book.
Kind of thing, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I wonder what the cover art's going to be.
I don't know, yeah. Alexa, my editor, was saying she's just thinking type.
type.
She's thinking just typographical at the moment, really. Which I kind of go a lot. I mean, it's one of the areas where, though, I went to art school for 5 years.
It's boring,
years,
like, man. You need a cool photo on there.
It's not an area where I think I have any expertise, really. I mean, I remember one of my novels overtaking my first novel. We used a photo, I think was it a Martin Parr photo, of a clown and a pottery clown. And I always think,
that's overtaken.
Having on the cover of your novel, having an image to which like 10% of the population have a phobia. A lot of people. That's a good start, isn't it? That's a real marketing coup.
I think you need some sharp graphic design, like a silhouette of a figure amongst an indistinct crowd. And then this figure is like standing out, walking, you know, just like some shapes or something, just something. Can't just have text. It will look like a fucking university textbook if you just have text.
Maybe. I don't know. I will tend to leave it to them.
That's
we'll
lazy.
See.
No. All right. I'll give me their email. I'll push back. Look, I had a nice message on our Instagram. Follow Alexis L Pod on Instagram. Marty messaged us. And he says, saw this and thought of you and Alexi as the first film suggested, it's a list of films, is Battle for Algiers. Maybe you could use some suggestions for the film club.
Mm.
Happy New Year. And this person has, Pop Smart Media has made a link on Instagram. What if watching movies this spring could help us think more clearly about the world we're living in? As an escape, but as preparation.
Yeah.
Films for fighting fascism. Okay.
Yeah.
12-week public syllabus, one film per week. So they've started their own little film club, basically.
Oh, okay.
All films right. for fighting fascism. As mentioned, there was a Battle of Algiers. Zero Dark Thirty. Is another one. That's
it's
film
an interesting.
About...
Yeah, go on.
No, you got. I haven't seen it. It's about.
No, it's an interesting. I've seen it a number of times. Catherine Bigelow. I mean, it's a sort of it's a pro torture film. Really, it's interesting to see the CIA operatives who are torturing, waterboarding people are really annoyed because I think Obama comes in and stops them torturing people, and they're quite annoyed, really. It seems quite a real... I don't know how. I think some people have probably suspected it's not a true account, really. But it's an interesting account of, you know, I mean, just seeing it from the... You know, it's ideology. There's no... But it has a political ideology, and that is entirely pro-American imperialism in a sense. Hmm. But, you know, why shouldn't you watch that? It's very efficiently done.
Well, so with each film, she lists a skill you can learn from it and a core question to ask.
All right,
so
go on.
Zero Dark 30, the skill is noticing how extreme actions become routine through procedure. The core question, how does violence start to feel inevitable? Mm-hmm. I won't read all the skills and questions, I guess, for all the films, but I'll quickly run through the films. There's Wag the Dog.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Justin Hoffman.
Detecting Spectacle and Manufactured Consent.
Yeah.
What are we being encouraged? What are we being encouraged not to notice? Syriana. I haven't seen that either.
Yeah, it's George Clooney, yeah.
I remember when it came out and I was like, Syria? And I was like, what's this? Understanding Impersonal Systems and Aligned Incentives. The Lives of Others, The Zone of Interest.
Yes, I still haven't seen that. I should.
Which one was that? The Zone of Interest?
That's the one set in the commandant's house outside.
Outside a concentration camp.
Auschwitz, yeah.
I haven't seen it either.
Of course, Jonathan Glazer made that one. He won the... Made a marvelous speech about, you know... About the genocide, which was quite...
Everyone was shocked.
Yeah, yeah.
They thought, look at this film about anti-Semitism, and let's give him the award, get him up there. And then he was like, yeah, this is actually about Palestine. And everyone was like, what?
Yeah, yeah. Very. I mean, it obviously, it made one of the great, you know, interesting guy, really. I was looking at some... just on YouTube, a video, Radiohead video, Karma Police, I think, where just really where he's in the car, kind of a big old US car, and they're chasing a man down a track, really. It's got no, you know, it's got no. And I think it's the lead singer, Johnny Greenwood. Is that the lead singer?
No, it's the guitarist. Tom York is the singer.
Tom York, yeah. Mm. He's in the front of the car, and he's in the back of the car and singing. And then you see the car sort of pursuing this man down a dirt road, really. It's a sort of middle-aged man running away from this car. And I noticed that it's an amazing video from the golden age of pop videos. I noticed the director was Jonathan Glazer. Sexy Beast, of course, is a masterpiece.
Yes, it is.
He also did it. I can't watch it, really. It's it's an extraordinary book called Under the Skin, which I couldn't finish because it is so horrifying.
Oh, God.
And he also made a film of it with semi-improvised with Scarlett Johansson, where she's driving around in a van and sort of luring guys. I mean, in real time. Luring guys into this van. I mean, it's taking quite a lot of liberties with the book. The book is staggering. Who's the author? If you just look up, who's the author of Under the Skin? Is it Tebow Fisher?
Michelle Faber.
Michelle Faber. It just, fucking hell, what a book. I find that film kind of unwatchable in a way.
Really?
A great talent. Well, anyway, so Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer, yeah.
Yes, Zone of Interest, maybe that's an interesting one for the film club. Okay. Selma, Norma Ray, The Insider, Children of Men, there's finally one I've seen.
Children of Men, yeah, it's really interesting. It's P.G. James' novel, isn't it? It's really, I mean, again, a very coherent, a really well-constructed world, I think, really.
Really, very much, yes.
Interesting really well cars as well. They use a lot of mad French cars, the Renault Velsatis and the...
I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The skill to learn from Children of Men is protecting care and solidarity in collapsed systems. And a core question is, where does hope live when institutions fail? Very post-civilization.
Fair, it's a great film.
Shawshank Redemption makes it on the list.
Yeah. Frank Darabont. It's a movie you can watch endlessly.
Yeah. Absolutely right. It's got this timeless quality to it, and it
wasn't a hit when it came out. Of course,
every note of the film just hits so nicely. It's a satisfying watch every time. Really, I used to say this thing when I tried to be erudite and philosophical when people would ask me about my opinions on Syria, because being Syrian, when the civil war started in Syria. I would have everyone I knew would ask me my opinion on it as if I was automatically informed just because I'm Syrian. And I guess being Syrian, your opinion is important, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're informed or as informed as you should be. But the metaphor I always used was Shawshank, the 2 miles of shit you got to crawl through before you get freedom, you know? Right. And I would describe the Civil War as the 2 miles of shit. And I'd say, you know, revolution is never easy. It's never simple. It's never clean. It's never without death, you know? And you got to go through the 2 miles of shit to find freedom. But I think they took a wrong turn at Albuquerque because it's not quite the freedom Syria deserves just yet. And the last film on the list is A Bug's Life, which is funny. They ended with like a nice soft note, but there is a film about people power and because it's about the ants coming together.
Is it?
To fight the authorities and how as individuals they're powerless, but when they come together they can defeat any enemy, you know. I thought it was a really nice list. So that's the list of films. If you guys at home want to jot that down and give yourself a list of movies to watch, I think I might work my way through them.
Yeah, I was actually one of the films that we mean I was talking to Linda about when we were on Aldi's is a film. I don't know where we are with Woody Allen films now, really, but there's a Woody Allen film called The Sweet and Lowdown. There's just been on Sky a terrible version of Amadeus.
I saw the ads for that.
Amadeus, Mozart, also Amadeus. Mozart and Salieri, and it's awful. It doesn't start out too bad, but it's really, really, really bad. But it's about, there's also a Woody Allen film called Sweet and Lowdown, which is about how Sean Penn is the greatest jazz guitarist in the world, except he's unfortunate enough to live in the same time as Django Reinhardt. And so he would be, and it's that, I mean, I suppose Salieri was a mediocrity, really. So Amadeus is not the Peter Schaefer play. It's not quite about the same thing. But it's about how do you live in a world when you're a genius, but there's an even greater genius? And I know that I remember Sean Penn can't say Django Reinhardt. He passes out. If anybody says Django Reinhardt, he faints. It also stars Samantha Morton, somebody I've worked with.
Yeah.
Who luminous beauty as a deaf mute, really. And Sean Penn's character is also a really bad person. Woody Allen's films, it'd be interesting to see. I might watch it anyway to see. I mean, Woody Allen's films for, all what we know about him now were full of the most interesting philosophical ideas, really. I don't know where to say where we...
Well, I don't know. It's hard to imagine watching a Woody Allen film without feeling a bit sick, really. But that's just your imagination. I'm sure actually just sitting down and watching it isn't that fucking difficult. And if it's a good film, it's a good film.
Yeah, it's about something. I mean, so many
of his films. Like some of his other films, it doesn't seem to be about dating and having sex with teenagers and stuff.
No.
Or does that feature in the film?
Not as far as that. Well, no. I mean, I think...
Because that would be a bit...
The Sean Penn character is a kind of pimp, right?
Oh.
But...
Did you watch Sinners from last year?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
It's a really, I think it's a unsuccessful film. I didn't even know that Michael B. Jordan was playing both those parts. Somebody's pointing out, Lisa, I think, was pointing out that he's an alumnus of The Wire, that he plays Wallace, who gets bumped off in the first two seasons of The Wire. Famous line of the other kid goes, "Where's Wallace? String, where's Wallace at, man? Where's Wallace?"
Right.
Knowing that he's been bumped off.
You didn't like Sinners?
I found Sinners really interesting. I thought you could have done without all the vampire shit, really.
Yes.
There's a much more interesting film about black life and black music and stuff like that. The vampire shit just seemed kind of getting in the way, really.
But why not? You know, it is like two different films been meshed together, but like, why not? It was fun. And you've got all that stuff, and then you've got all this other stuff. It's all there. I didn't feel like it dragged on too much, the vampire stuff, and there was some creative action ideas.
That scene with the Irish kind of musicians / vampires singing around a campfire is an extraordinarily powerful scene. It doesn't really make any sense, but it's a very powerful scene in and of itself.
I thought it was, I was mesmerized by it.
Mm-hmm.
The one moment of the scene that everyone harps on about was beautiful, but it wasn't like, it wasn't all that. There's a moment where you see all music throughout all history kind of happening at once, all through this one singer's performance. And,
right.
People made a massive meal out of that. I think there were much more important moments in the film than that, and performances. But it was gorgeous. And I don't know why I thought of The Sinners. I guess a film about musicians, Sweet and Lowdown. Mm. All right, Sweet and Lowdown. Let's hear from the listeners whether we want to watch that.
Indeed,
How do you feel about watching a Woody Allen film?
Yeah.
Part of the film club. Do we want to mar the name of the film club with these type of people? We're coming up to the end of the show, Alexi. Support the show, please. Patreon.com/AlexiSell podcast. Whenever we take a week off, when the rare times that happens, it does pain us. We don't do it on purpose.
No.
And we appreciate all the support we get. Anything else? Anything? Well, look, man, we didn't talk about... while we were away, we didn't talk... Bondi Beach fucking happened. The ice shooting just the other day, even yesterday, I think, as of recording. And I wanted to talk about the reform candidate for London mayor. We're both Londoners. I'll posit this at you and then tell me what you think. All right. I'm just going to tell you a bit some of her policies. What do you think? Before we go?
Yeah. All right.
Well, Farage unveils London's mayoral candidate to take out Khan. I don't think, just to start off, do you think, I don't think reform ever will stand a chance in London, of all places.
I guess not. I had no idea of the voting demographics. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Sadiq Khan, but...
Certainly, but I don't think, and we don't even know if Sadiq will be standing for a third term. But Leila Cunningham... is her name. She's very glamorous. Like, she's like the opposite of Farage, visually, physically speaking. Former public prosecutor. But here's some of her. There'll be a new sheriff in town, and I'll be launching an all-out war on crime. That's the top one. She thinks that it's become a knife capital of the world, London, and she wants to stamp down on that, probably including a lot of stop and searching and discrimination against... brown and black kids. And she vows to scrap the ULEZ. Have we ever voiced your opinion on ULEZ? Lex, do you want to put your...
The ULEZ.
Do you want to put your name in the ring here?
No, I have to pay it every time I move my car.
And how does that make you feel?
Well, you know, I think they lied to us about, didn't they, a few years ago. They told us that diesel cars were green and turned out they weren't, really. No, I mean, it's again, it's like, you know, like going on river cruises. Having a big diesel car, it's not, I know a few of you, you'll die inside when you hear this, that Lexi, no, not Lexi, got a whacking great car with a diesel engine in it, as if you weren't disillusioned enough by me going on a river cruise
and opening the show with a fighter jet.
I can afford I mean, it's an absurd indulgence having a car in London. I shouldn't have one, really. It's the last vestige of me holding on to the 1990s, I think.
It used to be your job, wasn't it, to review these?
I was a motion journalist, and also, you know, when I was gigging, I needed to get to places.
She wants to reclaim the city against grooming gangs.
Really? Which there aren't any in London, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's Reform's candidate for
London. I thought that would be more... What you told me so far... Dalal, I don't like her. So.
Thanks for going along with that. I thought that would be a more explosive ending.
I don't usually like to. That's weird. I was watching, like, just flipping around. I was watching Mickey Flanagan, who's a nice guy, came to actually see me on when I was at Soho Theatre, when I got really nervous and my voice cracked. I got it back, but it was a difficult night. Anytime I met, but I just watched him play in this huge arena. I think it must be Wembley. It looks like 15, 20,000 people. Anyway, he does some joke. I just came in the middle of it. And then he says, maybe I should do that on the Royal Command Variety performance. And then he says, no, I'm not, because I'm not bound and scraped into that big ear cunt, he says. And the audience kind of cheer, but you can see there. And then I think channeling me a bit, he says, oh, they do a lot for charity. Yeah, they do a lot of charity because they got all the fucking money. Mm. Again, the audience go, but they're not completely convinced, I think, a lot of his audience. Well, very unusual for such a mainstream. And then he says, he sort of does a bit where he says sort of into the microphone, you're losing them, Mickey, you're losing them. So he just went back to doing whatever he normally does.
That's interesting.
Maybe, but it was really, I don't know when it was from or interesting, but it was right in the middle, this really, I mean, it wasn't, funny, you know, it wasn't constructed as a joke, really. I mean, it did remind me a bit of me, really. But just blistering kind of anti-monarchy to such a huge audience. Yeah, that is surprising. Who really weren't expecting it.
And it does
have you, Mickey.
I guess, you know, his accent does make you think that a lot of his audience would be, you know, kind of like working class, right wing, white English people. You know?
Yeah, it looks like couples.
Maybe that's not fair. Yeah. But I always found him really funny, and he never did anything that was racist or stupid.
No, he's funny.
Cheap jokes, and I would love to ask him how it feels to have like something he came up with being just becoming a common vernacular, like going out that thing that he did. Yeah, you know, everyone now fucking says it now, and it's even on one of the tube stations, it's I don't know which station it is, but they have the underground logo, and where the name of the station is supposed to be written in the middle of the logo, instead of the name of the station, like Leicester Square or whatever, it says going out.
Really?
Yeah, in this central London tube station.
What have I given the world? I've given the world, who's that fat bastard? Uh-huh. And hello, John Gottney Motor. That's my contribution.
And Dr. Martin's boots.
I suppose.
People can't think of those boots without hearing that song in their head.
I suppose so. It's not enough.
Time for a pot noodle. And the Marxist dances. People come on.
That's true.
Still all over that shit. All right. Love you, Lexi.
All right.
Love you, listeners.
Bye. Yeah. Thank you. See you. We should be restored completely to health in next week. But I think we.
We did it. We're back.
Yeah, we covered some ground. Bye. You've been listening to the Alexis L podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.